influence the Seminoles, like television. How many, you know, is television something that plays a predominant part in the average Seminole's life, and what is it they get from television?
I think that they watch a lot of television from just strictly entertainment. I think they're back again. If you can go back to where we were when the television first came out, you know, everybody was glued to the television. Well, the kids on the reservations, I don't know that they're all that much different than we were or mm-hmm. whatever, but they watch television. They're like everybody else. They spend a lot of time watching television. Now, what you see from that, how it affects them as far as the culture is concerned, I don't really know. I haven't seen anything that I could say was directly related to television.
It's like having entertainment on the reservation. Is that a problem, our lack of entertainment? What outlet is there for the younger people, the teenagers on the reservation?
Well, that's another thing that, they're working on. They're trying to bring up to a standard, whatever the standard is. But we have our own recreation department, and they do have inter-reservation ball teams, and they have tournaments and basketball tournaments and softball tournaments. They're very sports-minded people. Mm-hmm. The group up in Brighton drive 30 miles to go to Okeechobee to watch a football game, the high school football game. They're very athletic people. There's a bowling group, and we've got some excellent bowlers. Some, they've gone to state tournaments. Hmm. So that they're working to get recreation to them, but again, I don't know if it's because of the way they've been suppressed, but some of them, you know, like all other societies, they're not interested. Mm-hmm. And they sit around, they don't watch TV, or they drink, or they do whatever. It's hard to say that they're any different than any of the other mm-hmm. society, especially for me to say, because I'm one of these kind of people that I have my own family, and I go home, and if the Russians landed, as long as they didn't jump my fence, I probably wouldn't know it for a while, So I don't really see that, I can't really say that the reservation is all that different. I know mm-hmm. people say, well, there's crime and there's this, and that. Well, that's everywhere, mm-hmm. I think you probably could compare it to maybe an inner city type mm-hmm. atmosphere. I think that's very close.
You were involved with health services, mm-hmm. so what would you say is the major number one health problem?
The people themselves. They spent more money repairing each other for injuries, that were either alcohol related or drug related. Now, there's something that's unusual in the tribe. I think that's unusual in the tribe, and I'm sure it must be. There's a very high rate of renal disease here with dialysis. Mm. The ratio is ridiculous. I think there's like 7 renal dialysis patients out of a population of 1,500. That's pretty high.
Yeah.
That's pretty high. And they've studied a lot of them. I think at one time more of them were out of the Big Cypress Reservation. And Big Cypress and Brighton. We only had one here in Hollywood. They've done studies, they've done different things to see if there was something as far as the environment mm-hmm. was concerned that was, causing that. I don't know that they ever really came to much of a conclusion, except they thought possibly it was the overweight, a lot of more overweight diet related. There's been a lot of emphasis on diet in the last 4 years and changing.
Is that through, the Agriculture Extension program or through the tribe?
It's been through Indian Health Service, mm-hmm. through the Indian uh-huh. Health Service. They have funded one of the nutritionists, and the other one is under the WIC program, which I think is through with the Department of Agriculture.
Right.
But they've come a ways. It's been interesting. We've laughed because we were laughing about today. I had lunch today with the nutritionist. He's from Jamaica, and
that's great.
We were laughing. One of the things that I think, I don't know if it's worse in this society than it is in ours, but social, seems like our primary social central thing is food. If you come to my house, you got to eat with me. And if we have a meeting, we've got to have something to eat. We got to have donuts. And in the afternoon, if somebody has a birthday, we all got to have cake. So there's this social thing around food. Well, when she first came, it was a riot because they'd come in with their trays of donuts, you know, and she'd be standing there going, Well, now they come in with their watermelon and their cantaloupe and their cheese and their crackers and their apples. And it's really kind of cute because those are some changes that have been made. They've started exercising. The tribe has become more mobile in that if they're not out in the, if the men and the women aren't out hunting or cooking that they did, you know, in their past, they're now running the ball field. And they've coordinated with, like, the recreation department. Last year, last fall, they had a contest, a weight reduction contest, and they gave prizes, and you'd go on a diet, and you'd weigh in every so often. And I think they even had some kind of competition other than the competition of one-on-one, you know, to lose the most weight. And they talk about things like, oh, gosh, you got donuts this morning? Well, don't let the nutritionist see it, you know. So they're becoming conscious. They're really becoming conscious of the things that they shouldn't be eating, and they realize some of the mistakes they've made, but nobody's been willing to give up fry bread. I don't even think the nutritionist. I think they got her switched over to fry bread, and she, you know, she's going for that too. But they are learning. I mean, it's they're probably on a scale of 1 to 12. They're still maybe at 2 as far as changing their nutritional. That's not the easiest thing in the world to do. I haven't had any luck with mine.
We've been eating since we left.
But it is a change that is coming about. You know, they are becoming conscious, and they're going to the schools, and even the kids in the schools now, you know, they're getting nutritional snacks. One of the things that they're doing, one of the programs, I think it's the Head Start program, and the nutrition group prepares the food, but they're serving a snack now. I don't know if it's every day or once a week or exactly how they do it, but they are serving a snack in the one of these programs, and it's a nutritional, you know, based snack. And then they're trying to teach the children to eat the bananas and the apples rather than the candy bar, and drink the juice instead of drinking, you know, the poonji, as they call it, and the whole thing. But it's, I mean, I can see, you know, 4 years I've been here, I can see a change in some of the areas.
I have a question with dates. I don't know if you can help me with this, but in 1911, am I correct that Big Cypress, what the land was in, became federated? Is that what happened? On their sign, it says Big Cypress, and the date is 1911.
And that may be, I don't know, when they became federally recognized. I can check. I've got a little history pamphlet.
If you do, I'd like to see that. What I wanted to find out was there a block of land was Hollywood, I guess it was Dania at that time. Mm-hmm. At the same time, was all this land given? The tribe was incorporated, what, in 57? I'm just curious to know about the land.
Land-based.
The reservations were officially recognized. Because I know Immokalee is very late, and then Tampa, of course, is the latest
one. Okay, if I can help you on that, which I might not be able to, but I do have a little thing I'll give you. I may have given you before.
Great.
If it's not in there while you're here, go to the Bureau.
Okay.
And they should be able to give you some exact dates.
That's what I'd like.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you shouldn't have any problem, you know, when you go over there. If you do, just give me a call and I'll come over there or go with you.
The Bureau's right next door.
Just next door. So,
what's the relationship? That's the Bureau of Indian Affairs. What kind of relationship does the Bureau have with the council and the corporation?
Well, BIA stands for Boston Indians Around. You know that. It's not really that bad, I don't think. I think that role has changed. Mm-hmm. Again, this is from just what I've heard people say, not from really anything I have seen. The change has not taken place that much during my time. But I think at one time, the Bureau of Indian Affairs was probably the policing. That's the way I'll say it. You know, they put the fences up and they made sure you stayed in the fences, and they threw the food across and the medical kits across, and, you know, you take care of yourself. Then I think that it's evolved kind of from that to... they're supposed to be advisors. From what we have here right now, that's basically the way I see the interaction between the two. They're very much, even though their building is there and this building is here, you are definitely in two distinct areas. When you go over there, you'll feel the difference. When you walk in the door, by the time you have hit the first office, and I'll be interested to see if you don't agree with me, it's an altogether different feeling. They're there if you need them. They do not come over here. Their staff does not mix over here. The staff is primarily Indian. I mean, you know, that, and I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
That they socialize very little during working hours. Now, they may, I don't know how they mix on the reservation after hours, but during working hours, rarely do you ever see any of that staff over here. And if you do, it's generally on official business. You know, it's they stay there and we stay here. During the council meetings, the superintendent does come sit in most of the time, and if there's a particular question about real estate, if they have to call in one of the other staff members, they answer the question. But they don't get involved in the discussions, or they don't give answers unless you specifically direct the question to them. Even if they know what you're saying may not be absolutely correct, this is the way I've seen, especially with the new superintendent. Now, I think before it was a little bit different. The acting superintendent was Seminole, raised on the reservation. James Billy's half-brother.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were raised in the same house a period of time. It wasn't their entire life, but there was a period of time they were in the same household. And at that time, I believe because of that unique relationship, there was more of a closeness than there is now. Now, the superintendent that's there now is Indian, but he's from another tribe. Mm-hmm. And it's a very business relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question, too, going back to health services. I was just curious to know, since you were involved with that, what did you see? Was there any conflict between the health services and the medicine man or the medicine woman on the reservation, and what is that status now?
I think when I first started, that was probably worse. There wasn't as good a relationship as there is now. This is totally off the record. I hate to give this man credit for anything, but he deserves it. Dr. Hilton, who is the chief medical officer now, he served a period of like 17 years in Africa as a missionary doctor with an African tribe there. So culturally, to a point, he was already oriented to the tribal medical practices, in that he was familiar that each tribe, you know, the tribes had their own.
Right.
Their own,
he was sensitive.
Yeah, very sensitive. Okay, so when he came here, he made an effort to consult with the medical men and to work closely, as close as they could. Now, I think that relationship has grown, and I think because of that it's. That it's better. I really couldn't measure, you know, where it is at this point, but I would say it has improved. There are some of the people there are some of the, it's kind of funny. It's kind of like our specialized medicine, I think, in our culture. You know, if you need an obstetrician, you go to an obstetrician. If you need a foot doctor, you go to the foot doctor. Well, I think to them, it's kind of the same thing. Some of the things they have need to be treated with Western-type medicine, and they go to the clinic and don't think anything of it. And then some of them feel stronger. You know, they feel it's something that may be more of a spiritual-type thing, and they go to the Indian medicine man.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's kind of worked its way together. And when I first came here, the tribe was just in the midst of what they called an Indian medicine program, which they were working very close with the medicine men. And then Dr. Hilton came in, and he kind of slid into that slot. So I think it has improved, but there again, there are still some that wouldn't go, you know, they don't want to go to him, and some that don't want to go to him, you know.
Yeah.
And they all then still have their own special medicine men that they want to go mm-hmm. to. But I think that they, mm-hmm. I think that they have probably, are again, more comfortable with each other. I think Dr. Hilton has referred to the Indian medicine men.
Do you find that it's primarily the older people, though, that consult with the medicine man, or the younger, or is that something that the mothers would take care of as far as children?
I think that probably depends on a lot on how traditional the family is. I think if you find a real traditional family, then the children probably go, you know, more to the younger ones would even go to the medicine man, but if you get into some of the families that aren't quite so traditional, they don't go. And Indian medicine, to a point, also has a religious mm-hmm. overtone here. You know, now I was surprised to find this out myself. The people we have, one of the religious groups, they to them Indian medicine is taboo type thing. They don't have anything to do with the. With the Indian medicine, and one of the people that I'm talking about was her grandfather was one of the strongest Indian medicine men here. But I think they believe there is a voodoo portion, somewhat to it.
This
you know,
would be
twang to it.
If they say joined the church and the church was discouraging it, or?
I don't know exactly how that works. Again, I was surprised to find out. I think again it's the group that belongs to the church. Looks to Christ and mm-hmm. the religious end of it for the spiritual problems, where the people that were involved in medicine, Indian medicine, were looking to the medicine man and the different things. So there I don't know exactly how that works, but I know that there is a tone to it, because I found that out with working with one of the girls that was real religious. And I said something about Indian medicine, and she said they don't even believe in that. They don't have anything to do with it, which I thought was different.
Yeah.
Because I thought that was such a cultural thing,
yeah.
and that
wouldn't die.
Yeah,
out.
But there is something.
Are most of, if they do go to church, what church do they go to?
It's a they're Baptist.
Baptist.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. There's been a Baptist missionary. In fact, he's the one that has this church here has been on the reservation since 1952, I believe. He's a great historian.
Oh, back here at the little church here?
Yeah, Janice Crenshaw. He and his family been here. Again, they've seen the kids that are having kids now born. You know, it's been one of those things. And then there's been the Miccosukee Church, which is also Baptist, that's across the road, that's run by a Seminole minister, Seminole man.
Who runs that church?
Jimmy Hank Osceola.
Oh, okay. Paul Buster, now, he's a minister, too.
Yeah,
he?
And I think, I'm not sure which one of those churches that he's involved with.
Yeah.
I think it is the Miccosukee. And they all work together. They're all kind of, they're all Baptists.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have functions together, and one may have a revival or a singing group, and then they'll all go to Big Cypress, or Big Cypress group will all come in here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something on that order.
Well, I don't know if you can explain this or not, but what is the difference between the Miccosukee and the Seminole tribes?
From what I understand, they were basically the same people.
Yeah.
They split over political differences. And the Miccosukee group is more, in my opinion, the traditional. They are more representative of the traditional. There's kind of degrees. There's the real traditional Indian group that's found out on a trail past where Miccosukee is. They're non-affiliated with any of the tribes. Then, to me, they're the most traditional type group. Then the Miccosukee, and then the Seminoles. Seminoles are more advanced, I think, in their thinking and their reaching out than the Miccosukee group. But it started over those very same political differences, I understand.
Right.
Oh, well, so those Indians that are more or less independent, do they receive any benefits, or they don't?
They don't. They don't, and they do. That I've seen take change. And I think this is remarkable. when I told him so. When I first started work here, there was a lawsuit going on between the traditional Seminoles. They had a class action suit against the Indian Health Service because they were not eligible for health care. And Indian Health Service gets complicated. They go by service areas and a whole bunch of mm-hmm. stuff. But these people felt like that they should be entitled to health care under the mm-hmm. Indian Health Service. Well, they won their suit. And living in a certain county, they were eligible. Well, the guy that led that march, we used to try to send what we call a CHR, Community Health Representative, over to some of these people. We would hear they'd be sick, and she would go over to make a home visit with them and see if there was anything. She's actually been, and she's Seminole. She'd been sent out of there fearing for her life. They didn't want anything to do with the tribe. They didn't want to be affiliated with the tribe. They didn't want any of the services of the tribe. They didn't want nothing to do with the federal government. They wanted to stay independent. Well, this guy, and his name is Guy Osceola, led the suit.
You heard? I was wondering if I had that feeling.
Yeah, it was Guy. Do you know that he came in here 2 weeks ago with his application
to join the
Seminole tribe? And I told him, I said, well, it's about time. You know, I mean, he and I made big friends. You know, he calls me. If he has mm-hmm. a problem over there, he would call over here when I was in the health program. And then after I moved over here into the chairman's office, he said, well, you're still my source, you know. If I have a problem, I still call you. Well, he came in here the other day and the big smile on his face, and I said, well, what are you doing here? Well, he showed me that application. I said, if I wanted to grab him and hug him, I don't know why I felt it was important, but there are so many things that they weren't eligible for. You know, they couldn't get, the Indian Health Service, they could because they were in the area. They finally won that. But if they even moved into a different county, they weren't eligible for it. At that particular time, Guy was living in Tallahassee. His family became eligible, his mother and his sisters, but he wasn't eligible because he lived in Tallahassee, and that wasn't the service area, you know. But a lot of the things that they can spend money on is, you know, through federal programs, like educational things, mm-hmm. Different funding like comes down from the Bureau and things like that. They can spend on them if they're a member of the tribe, or, you know, there's different assistance, educational assistance. But if they're not tribal members, even the tribal policies would be not to spend it on a non-tribal member. Right. So
that's really interesting. So there still are some independents living out
there. Yes, yeah, there are. And his family.
OB.
And I think his father was Corey, but he died. Mm-hmm. But it's that family. Now, it's that family that's the real traditional group.
They probably were the camp, and then, you know, stayed.
Yeah, and there's several families there. I'm not sure who they are. There's some more over in the Fort Myers area. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure who they are. But they in fact, I think it's OB's. Where was it? Somebody told me just recently that they tried to go into that area to help them, and they were very adamant. We don't want nothing to do with you. Get out of here. You know, we're making it on our own. But I think they're starting to see that health care and all these things are expensive. And the general public assumes because they are Indian and they hear about bingo and all, they don't understand all the logistics of what's happening. You know, think, well, you're an Indian, and
right.
You know, you should be able to get the federal government.
That's so confusing to most people who don't have contact down here. They don't understand that the Miccosukees and the Seminoles are really political entities, and you know, there are independent, even though blood-wise, yes, they are Indians,
right.
They're not part of this political
body. That's right, that's right.
And then it's real confusing, too, because there's the corporation and the, you know, the council, there's the
board.
Economic and the political side of it, and it gets real confusing because you got the president and the chairman, and you know.
I know it gets confusing down here too.
And then you've got the Bureau, and you're between all the chiefs, you know.
Too many chiefs, not enough Indians. Is that what you're trying to say?
But really, that was fine.
About field days? Is that serving a need among the tribe for, I guess, like cultural identification? I know there are a lot of different contests and things that take place in those field days.
I really don't. I have mixed emotion about that. Again, uh-huh. This is strictly my own personal opinion. I think that the field days, again, I apologize, I may be wrong. They're basic, right now, the way I see it, their basic initiative becomes from a monetary standpoint. Okay, mm-hmm. Then they have to do something. If they're going to have people come in to get money, they've got to do something. Yeah. So to me, it's kind of an exploitation because I don't find them doing it merely for recreation. Let's say it that way, you know.
Okay.
If I saw them doing it, you know, every Saturday, the fourth Saturday, all out there because they all like to get together, then I would say that it was serving a purpose. But the only purpose I see on the field days that they have now, like the fair, is that what you're referring to as a field day or the?
Not the fair so much, but I was thinking more of. I'm calling it a tribal field day, but where the people from, like a reservation, would get together. And I was wondering, like, if there were costume judging contests and craft displays. Is that a different name?
The only time that I see that is, again, a monetary thing. It's during what we call the tribal fair. Or now, again, it may be something that they did at one time that this just seems to be the appropriate time to do it, and it becomes a part of the function. But again, as an outsider, I see it as a calling card,
mm-hmm.
you know, to come in and spend your money.
Yeah.
It's being done everywhere, but I don't see it being done just for fun. I do see the recreation part of the basketball games and that they do, and there's not a charge, and they do that for their own exchange. But
the airship field.
Yeah, as far as games go, do you ever... are there ever competitions with the stickball? Is that a game?
I don't think the stickball kind of got lost. That was one of the things that got lost mm-hmm. in the shuffle.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's one of the things they're teaching again under the cultural program. And they're reviving all of those old games, and they're starting at the bottom, you know, they're teaching the children how to make the little shuttle thing, whatever it was, and that they used.
Oh yeah,
it was a little cup like thing.
Oh
yeah, isn't it? Isn't that what they use in the stickball? It's a little cup of
some
kind.
Like a lacrosse thing.
Yeah.
And then they make a ball that's not really round; it's kind of flattish and.
Yeah, they're doing that. That's one of the things they're doing under the cultural program, and they're having the storytelling. Now, one of the things that they just did, which I was talking about this morning, and I think is great, they had. In conjunction, I think, with the state somehow, they went to a camp up in Ocala called Camp Macquarie, and they took the kids, the teenagers, I think it was 8 to 16 was the age group that they took for this week of camp. And they took staff people from here they taught everything from sex education to cultural things.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that's from hearing James talk, that was a very much a part of their lifestyle was storytelling in the evening, mm-hmm. in the fire, around the fire. Or I've heard him say that's how he used to go to bed, was the grandmother would hold him and tell stories, and then he'd fall asleep, you know. And that's the way the kids went to sleep. Well, they had the storytelling and the whole thing. And they brought in, he went and took his guitar and played for them around the campfire and told stories. And other, you know, some of the other people went and told the story. So it was a mixture of the things that need to be done in life, I guess, from a health standpoint, so forth, plus a combination of some of their cultural practices, the storytelling and all that.
That sounds great.
And they were there, I think, for 4 or 5 days. And, the kids really, they really liked it. And that they were talking this morning, whoever it was I was talking with said that they had the children do evaluations. And that they took their time and wrote, you know, out how they felt. And the things that came out that they liked the best were the cultural things.
Things so, that they probably didn't get at home anymore. And really
were fascinated with.
They really.
What about recently in June? I think the Governor's Council of Indian Affairs arranged for maybe 30 or 40 of Seminole teenagers to come to Tallahassee, and they spent 5 or 6 days at the Capitol and doing various activities.
Okay, I heard about that. I knew the kids went up there, and I knew that it was something the governor's council was doing, but I did not really hear any real feedback on what happened. Again, that was kind of done by another group. But a lot of that stuff don't really filter through here.
I see.
It does if he's directly involved or I'm directly involved, you know, or if it happens to be a department head that I'm particularly close to, then I may hear something. Mm-hmm. But this particular function was like the CETA. It wasn't really the CETA kids, but was a group that I'm not that involved. I don't really have that much, hear that much feedback on.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know they were there, and they had a banquet
and
some recognition mm-hmm. of the kids. Yeah, they did that year before last, too, I think.
The primary purpose, the way I understood it, was to give the kids a sense of career possibilities mm-hmm. and orientation and the value of education, and I was just curious.
Well, the staff did one here, a mini one type thing here, which was real nice and kind of different. They took the kids. I really am envious lots mm-hmm. of times of the things that the Indian kids get to do because of the foresight I think that the leaders have. I really mm-hmm. have to credit to that, but they've taken some of these kids. Now, you've been to Big Cypress.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you know those remote areas.
Yeah.
Well, they brought those kids from the different reservations to Rolling Hills Country Club and Hotel, put them up for like 2 days, and gave them the banquet tour type, workshop type thing. They didn't do it on a low budget thing and bring them and herd them into the council room that they're in all the time. They gave them not only the exposure to different careers and so forth, but they gave them that exposure to the outside culture, you know.
Right.
And that's one of the things that I think that totally fascinates me about James Billy. This is the way he does things. He kind of plops them out of that into this, but
yeah.
plops them back,
yeah.
you know, and it's kind of different because I was raised in a rural area in West Virginia. I never was in a hotel until I was 18 years old, much less to go spend the night, you know, and I can imagine these kids mm-hmm. would not have had that chance either if it wasn't for the innovation of the leaders and so forth. But
right.
one of the things that James did, I might have told you about this, Mary.
Well, I bet you're going to tell me the story about going up with
Smithsonian
the van and picking up all those people and going, I was telling Peggy.
I was just...